Last time we began this series by taking a look at the early life of Jesus, what shaped his home life, and the prevailing beliefs of the area and time in which he spent his first 30 years. He was raised a devout Jew in an area of the Middle East that was under Roman rule at the time, but influenced by both Greek and Roman philosophy. His family journeyed from Nazareth in the Galilee up to Jerusalem to keep the Feast of Passover every year. Except for a brief glimpse at age 12, there is nothing in the Bible nor in secular history that would bring him to our attention. If he had been a notorious rabble-rouser all his life, he would probably have been in a reserved spotlight, right up there with the famous Roman soldiers and emperors, of whom movies are made. We also looked at the Abrahamic covenant, the exodus of the Hebrews out of slavery in Egypt, and the handing down of the Ten Commandments and other Jewish laws to Moses at Mount Sinai during the Exodus, thousands of years prior to the birth of Jesus. Then we took a very brief peek into some of the very strange and sometimes incomprehensible laws that the Jews were expected to follow to the letter on pain of death. Today I'd like to delve deeper into the various books of Jewish law, and I put that in quotation marks because some are actually written while others are passed down orally through the generations, and see if we can get a clearer picture of what the Jews are taught as their laws and what we as Christians are taught as the law of love. To begin, I'd like to quote Herbert W. Armstrong from the Old Correspondence Course. Who remembers that? I see some smiles out there. It continued on and on. I got to lesson 72 before it was finally condensed into 69 lessons around 1970. In those lessons, Herbert W. Armstrong gave his overarching view of what the Bible is. And I quote, "The Bible is a collection of stories about a group of people known as the Israelites as they came into contact with the other tribes and peoples around them." That should give us a pretty good framework for the lessons, the laws, the wars, the lifestyles, and the expectations of those Israelites. From the beginning, they saw themselves as the chosen people of the Supreme God, and therefore fashioned their very identity as a nation around that premise. They were not easy on themselves, nor on those they came into contact with. Their myriad laws are evidence of that. Let's begin with the written Torah. And the Torah is actually the easiest of all the Jewish law books to recognize and for us to feel familiar with. The written Torah is just the Jewish name for the Pentateuch, or the first five books of the Old Testament. It is the scroll that was read in the synagogue every Sabbath, and which Jesus and Paul would have referred to as the books of the law. That's what was available to them during their ministries. Yes, they would have known that there were all those other Jewish laws, but the main collection found in every synagogue was the written Torah. Next, we have the Talmud. And the first thing we should know is that the written Torah, or the Pentateuch, is not a part of the Talmud. There are actually two Talmuds, which we will explore as we go along. The Talmuds are divided into six sections, which each contain the laws and traditions of the 3rd to 6th centuries of the Common Era. So we see, the Talmud as it exists today was not even a thought in the minds of the rabbis who lived at the time when Jesus was beginning his ministry. Section 1, the Zeraim, translated as seeds, holds the agricultural laws, also the laws of blessings and prayers. And it contains 11 tractates. A tractate is a treatise or an essay. So whenever we see the word tractate, we think of it as an essay. Number 2 was the Moed, or festivals, the laws of Sabbaths and holy days. And it contained 12 tractates. Number 3, Nashim, or women, were the laws around marriage and divorce, contained in 7 tractates. Number 4, the Nizikim, or damages, were the civil, criminal, or ethics laws, and this was covered in 10 tractates. Kodashim, or holy things, the laws covering sacrifices, the temple, and diet, comprised 11 tractates. And number 6, the Taharot, or purities, the laws of ritual purity, contained in 12 tractates. So we see the Talmud consists of laws divided into 6 sections and contained in 63 treatises or essays. The main text of the Talmud is the Mishnah, which is made up of the terse teachings which were written down following the destruction of the Second Temple in Jerusalem in 70 AD. Now, as I go through all these dates, think about them. This is long after the crucifixion. Over the next several hundreds of years, the teachings were collected into 2 great bodies of work. The Jerusalem Talmud contained the teachings of the rabbis in the land of Israel. Under the Roman ruler Gallus, in 351 of the Common Era, the land of Israel was devastated, and most Jewish sages fled to Babylon, leaving the Jerusalem Talmud incomplete. The Babylonian Talmud contained the teachings of the rabbis in Babylon, just south of modern-day Baghdad in Iraq. In Babylon, the centers of learning continued to flourish, and in 392 of the Common Era, exiled rabbis Rav Ashi and a colleague Ravina I began to gather the teachings of the earlier sages, organized and clarified the statements about the Mishnah, and began to edit what would become the Babylonian Talmud. The laws for Jewish people, wherever they may be worldwide. The Babylonian Talmud is considered the most authoritative version because it was more widely used and had been completed 150 years after the beginning of the Jerusalem Talmud, which was written in a much more archaic style. Students and descendants of the original authors continued work on the Babylonian Talmud until the year 499 of the Common Era. That year is considered the end of the Talmudic era. After 499, no further additions were made, and the Talmud was not to be disputed. It contains 2,711 double-sided pages, including the Talmud and commentary. The main commentary is by Rashi, a rabbi in 10th century France, as well as by Tosafot, a group of his descendants and students. Both works were written in Aramaic, the language probably spoken daily by Jesus of Nazareth. There were also many, many more pages by other commentators. But any way we slice it, this is a huge body of work, and it still doesn't contain all the Jewish laws. Nobody could possibly keep that many laws, even if they could remember just a small fraction of them. I can just picture the rough draft. Every time somebody had an idea, they jotted it down, and it became a law. Remember that we learned the last time, the Abrahamic covenant is God-given. The Talmud is man-made. As we said earlier, the Mishnah contains the laws up to the destruction of the Second Temple in Jerusalem. It also contains the oral Torah. But just by virtue of its being oral, presents a problem. Question is, if the oral Torah is essential to understanding the Talmud, why wasn't it written down to begin with? Here we need to go back to Mount Sinai. It is written in the Talmud that God told Moses to write down the words for yourself. At the same time, the Talmud prohibits memorizing the oral Torah and also prohibits writing it down. Peculiar that they would have all these laws and not be allowed to write them down so they could familiarize themselves with them, when the written Torah itself commands the Jews to keep the oral Torah. It goes on to say, you may write the written Torah, but you may not write halacha, the oral Torah. The oral Torah was actually started by a Gentile, a descendant of Sisera, who had converted, named Rabbi Akiva. Sisera was the commander of the Canaanite army of King Jabin of Hazor. We can find the story of Sisera in Judges chapters 4 and 5. In the oral Torah, it says that the Jews have never lived by the words of the written Torah. So here they have this scroll that's read every week in the synagogue, but they've never lived by the words of it. But they live by the traditions of the rabbis. With the oral Torah constantly changing, we can never tell whether a law is current, passé, or just very recently penned. Oral traditions can change at any time, and there's no proof of authenticity. Because the word oral actually tells us the laws are passed by word of mouth, but not necessarily written down. It's interesting to know that the oral Torah was started by a Gentile convert, while the New Testament was written by Jews and reflects the life of a Jewish Messiah. This could explain the difference in tone and purpose of the Old Testament laws as compared to the law of love. Another interesting point is that all the heroes of 2 millennia ago, around the time of Jesus, were known for their great deeds. David, Noah, Joseph, Moses, Deborah, Solomon. While today all the Jewish heroes are rabbis, their knowledge is their only claim to fame. Earlier we mentioned some of the obscure and strange sounding laws and practices which seem to stand alone. But this is where the oral Torah comes in. It's like an owner's manual, so to speak, a companion guide for the Talmud. It goes into further detail regarding various commandments, but just by virtue of its being oral, sometimes results in gaps where the later writers supposed their readers were familiar with the original laws. One of the reasons given for not having the oral Torah written down was so that it could be the exclusive property of the covenant community, the Jews. They feared that if it existed in written form, anyone could copy and claim it as their own. That begs the question, why would anyone want to be so tied completely to thousands of pages of laws which are impossible to keep? Eventually it was written down in part, of course. Even so, it's still not fully comprehensible without a greater knowledge of the written Torah and the Talmud. In the century before the destruction of the temple, disputes about the law reached such a boiling point that it was feared people would believe there were two different Torahs. During the time of the Roman Empire and the resulting diaspora, it was decided to compile one concise text which was available to all. And this is a text that became known as the Mishnah. Keep in mind, the Mishnah does not contain the complete oral Torah, only the essential topics. Still an impossible list to follow without falling short. The common everyday laws that the people were so familiar with that they were almost automatic were not included in the Mishnah. And this has led to vague references to such things as tefillin, tzitzit, the mezuzah, and the recital of the Shema, along with the four species, which I found are four plants used for cleansing and deodorizing the tabernacle dwellings. Makes sense. These obscure laws were daily rites and rituals that needed no explanation to Jewish families. But of course, they became another set of laws known as the Baraito. Literally translated, this means external Mishnah, or laws outside the Mishnah. Because the Talmud was accepted as the Jewish law, it is considered binding on all Jews, no matter where or when they live. It is this binding of the law that has kept the Jewish identity so strong for thousands of years throughout their long and bitter exiles. Very nearly at the midpoint of what we know as Jewish history, a baby boy was born to a couple descended from the Davidic line. He would be called the Messiah, the Deliverer. This child grew and spent the first 30 years of his life in obscurity, following the Jewish teachings, traditions, and rituals of his parents and the other Jews of his hometown. This teaching included the command to stone anyone who was either homosexual, an adulterer, or a blasphemer. The same punishment was commanded for any child who dared curse his parent. Then, at the age of 30, he was baptized in the Jordan River by his cousin, John the Baptizer. From that time forward, he set out to make sure that the people knew that the Abrahamic covenant was with God, and that the written Torah, the Talmud, the Mishnah, the oral Torah, and the Baraito were man-made. He drilled home in his message that the Jewish laws were made for man and not the other way around. Man was not created to be bound by laws too numerous to name and too onerous to keep. So we've seen what Jesus was up against. But do we have a clear picture of what he thought of the laws he had studied and grown up with? Personally, I used to think he had come to tear down the rites and rituals of the Jewish nation and replace them with the good news of the kingdom of God. But is that what he's quoted as saying? Let's look at Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 and 18. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law and the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. And in verse 18, I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, nor the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. The word translated fulfill is pleru, which means to make something effectual or to fill it full. The word translated law is the word Torah. Who was Jesus talking to? Chapter 4, verse 25 tells us they were the large crowds who followed him from Galilee, the Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and the region across the Jordan. Did you notice something? There is not one soul from 21st century Calgary among them. He was talking about the law and the prophets, the Pentateuch, which they were so familiar with they didn't need to write down a lot of the laws because they could perform them in their sleep. He said, I haven't come to do away with the Torah. The Jewish people will have those laws forever. Then he went on in verse 19. Anyone who breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. In verse 20, for I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Is he still talking about those same Jewish laws here? When we follow the cross references in verse 19, we find that the laws referred to here would appear to be the Ten Commandments. As the author James says in chapter 2, verse 10, verses 10 to 13, for whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles at just one point is guilty of breaking it all. For he who said, do not commit adultery, also said, do not murder. If you do not commit adultery but do commit murder, you have become a lawbreaker. Speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom. Because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. The Talmud, the Mishnah, the Oral Torah, and the Bereto were harsh and judgmental, full of killing and failure. In Matthew 19, verses 16 to 19, when a rich young man asked Jesus what good things he should do to get eternal life, Jesus quoted the Ten Commandments to him. He didn't begin listing all the Jewish laws, nor did he quote the simple law of love. It's interesting to note that the Talmud was still a work in progress for 4 centuries after the crucifixion of Christ. He would have known only the local knowledge, the Torah, the Pentateuch or scrolls, and the oral Torah. Yet no matter how little information was available at the local level, Jesus would have been well-versed in the law, as he already knew at age 12 that that was his father's business. So Jesus didn't come to completely wipe out all the Jewish laws, which have been and will remain in the guidelines for an ancient and blessed race of people. After all, God did give some of those laws to Moses on Sinai along with the Ten Commandments. Jesus' message was concise, easily remembered, few lines to define for and show his followers down through the millennia which were yet to come how to achieve righteous living. When asked what is the law of freedom or the greatest commandment in Matthew 22:37-40, Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." And then in verse 40 he says, "All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." All the law